Now, do you remember your school principal? Perhaps you had a few, like me, I went to 13 schools, presiding over those morning assemblies with an interesting blend of authority and pastoral care. They were real characters sometimes, weren't they? A dynamic school principal can really lift the quality of a school, but is it getting harder to do the job? Principals need business and management skills to run their schools, in addition to being curriculum leaders, thought leaders, maintaining academic standards. Much of their time is spent in other areas apart from teaching and learning now, and this is sobering. According to a new survey into their well-being, they also experience more violence in the workplace than other professions. It's no wonder that there's not a rush of applicants to fill principal positions, and the need is acute. A staggering 70% of our principals in primary and secondary schools across the three school systems will reach retirement age in the next 5 years. That's 70%. So as baby boomer principals leave the profession, will the next generation step up or decide too much work, not enough money to do the job of school principal? And we thought we'd invite a couple of three guests to join us to discuss this issue and the report. I'm joined by Cherie Vertigan, President of the Australian Secondary Principals Association, Professor Karen Starr, the Chair of School Development and Leadership at Deakin University and a former principal of 15 years herself, and Dr. Philip Riley, Senior Lecturer in the School of Education at Monash University, also a former teacher and principal. Welcome to you all.
Good morning, Natasha.
Thanks. Morning.
Well, we've got some important terrain to cover here. Philip Riley from Monash, you've just released an interim report on what is essentially a longitudinal health and wellbeing survey of Australian principals. So tracking them over time, and it asks lots of questions, and overall principals actually expressed they were quite satisfied with their work. But this unexpected result was the high number of principals reporting physical violence and threats. Tell us about that difficult finding.
Well, I can't tell you too much because it was a surprise to me too. I wasn't expecting it, and we only asked a few questions around that. Mm. We're going to do a lot more research on this in the coming months and years, presumably. I've got a PhD student who's now going to work on this.
What did they say?
Well, it was just an online survey. So what we've got is, have you experienced a number of what was called objectionable behaviours in the past 12 months, and that was sexual harassment, counts of threats of violence, actual physical violence, bullying, unpleasant teasing, conflicts and quarrels, and gossip and slander. And on most of those levels, principals experience a rate that's, you know, 4 to 6 times higher than the rest of the population.
So it's physical and emotional violence, in a sense.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Did you dig into any further detail, or was it more a sort of surface question?
It is a surface question. We have more detail. What I just reported to you then is really we collapsed it down to a single count. Have you experienced this, yes or no? But we actually have frequency levels for all of the principals, which we haven't reported in the interim report yet, because I want to match that against more fine-tuned demographic data, and we're waiting for that data to come to us.
It's very worrying, isn't it, to have just this little hint of detail. Your hunch is that classroom teachers would tell a similar story. They're, of course, at the front line in dealing with difficult students and aggressive parents too, we can't forget.
Yeah, well, my hunch is actually that teachers are probably experiencing more.
Mm.
If you think of the anecdotal evidence is that it's mainly parents. I mean, obviously there's some students, and secondary schools are reporting higher levels than primary schools. But if you think of an angry parent getting to the principal, they're probably going to have run into a few teachers along the way, including the classroom teacher first, and perhaps a number of times.
Was violence or this degree of emotional violence as well more of a problem in particular schools? Because, of course, you surveyed the public schools, Catholic schools and independent schools. In fact, we're talking about a couple of thousand of principals who filled out this survey, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Mm.
Yeah, there is a bit of differentiation. I mean, the surprising thing is it's across all states, all sectors. I think that's the big story. But the small story is some of the smaller states, Western Australia, South Australia and Northern Territory, are reporting higher levels. Secondary principals are reporting higher levels than primary, and that would be including the students in that figure. But the main one is the regional and rural remote area schools. They're more at risk.
You also tracked a whole lot of measures in terms of well-being, lifestyle, alcohol use, a whole gamut of questions. Did some of these stresses track on to outcomes in those well-being measures?
That's what we're looking at now. We're still waiting for some important demographic data to come to us before we can really dig into that in a big way. But it's certainly there's a couple of things that have come out of it. Principals are working very long hours inside school terms, and a lot of them are working very long hours in their holidays. And there is definitely a correlation between the amount of hours worked in holidays and their mental health status. The general mental health is not as good as the general population, which was not surprising. I mean, it's why I started the study in the first place. But if you look at the demographics that we do know about the principals, they come from very stable backgrounds, they live in stable relationships, they're highly educated, they have all the kinds of predictors that would say they should be above the norm in terms of mental health, and yet they're below it. And there's a very long tail when you look at the results graphed out. So we've got lots of people who are doing quite well, a few round the medium, and then there's this long tail of people who are just coping.
Who are struggling. Yeah. Cherie Vertigan from the Australian Secondary Principals Association, are you surprised by the survey? Is that the kind of feedback you're getting from your members?
I'm certainly not surprised by the survey and the survey data at all. I think our members have been saying for a long time that the nature of the job has changed and the communities that many of them work in have changed. And I guess probably when we talk about reporting incidents, a lot of principals get to the point where they're quite immune to the incident. So from my expectation, some of the minor incidents would just be passed off as being part of the day-to-day proceedings of being in that role.
And increasingly so.
And increasingly so. And I guess probably the thing that my members are reporting is that, you know, there are some people who are very resilient or appear to be very resilient until something major happens and everything unravels. And there are another group who have put in some pretty good supportive factors to help them through it. But in reality, you know, it's from the abusive phone call to the confronting parent, child or man in the street to the constant deprivation of your private life, particularly if you live in rural, regional and remote Australia where there's nowhere to go, it's a big issue for principals, and it certainly is something that they're considering.
Is there any recourse? I mean, are the systems of reporting adequate at all? If a principal is having, is suffering in this way, is there any point to them reporting it?
I think there certainly is a point to reporting it, but I think too, principals as a group of people tend to be quite stoic and try to manage things themselves so that they can get to a good outcome. I mean, obviously having a positive relationship with your community is the most important thing, so if you can work through it at a local level rather than call in higher level intervention, then that's a good thing. But, you know, the downside is that perhaps even with Phil's data is that it is underestimating some of the things that happen. And when you talk to education departments, I think sometimes they believe that they are not quite getting the whole story. And then the question is, you know, does this just mirror our society and our communities, and what can we do realistically to prevent it? That's the biggest challenge, I think, that we face in this area.
I wonder if principals, I mean, they start out being teachers, they do a dip ed, they develop a career as a teacher. Are they prepared to be these incredibly skilled mediators of conflict?
I think I would say that for some it comes a lot easier than for others. Mm. It's really around our emotional intelligence and the professional learning opportunities that we have along the way, the support networks that you'd build. But, you know, you do start off as a teacher, and as Phil and I were talking about it before, sometimes people just accidentally end up becoming a principal. And, you know, in our current environment, we need to make sure that there is a lot more intensive and supportive professional learning, especially as the number of tasks that are part of being a principal increases. You can't just go from being an English teacher to a business manager to a person who climbs the ladder, to the person who resolves the conflict, or to the person who's dealing with the family in crisis without some form of professional learning and support.
Professor Karen Starr, Chair of the Centre for School Leadership and Renewal at Deakin University, you were a school principal for 15 years yourself before you became a researcher and an academic. Was the writing on the wall, even when you were a principal, of the situation that Phil and colleagues' survey has detected?
Well, I'll probably look at it in a broader context, in terms of not just the violence, but looking at Phil's study in its entirety. I think principles, the principalship has changed as education systems have devolved more autonomy at the school level. And so a lot of work that was once done at the bureaucratic level or the regional level is now funneled down into the school. And so there's been an incremental function creep, I suppose, of the range of tasks that are conducted on site. And so it's much more pressured. Time is always lacking. And schools now are responsible for making all sorts of decisions, their budgets, their human resource decisions, huge facilities decisions. There's the huge buildings going on in many schools across the country at the moment. They manage all of those on top of the teaching and learning. So the angle I'm taking is that really what principals want more is more time to focus on what they got into the job in the first place for, and that's teaching and learning and students and curriculum. And the business side of the school, which is mammoth, the business and governance side, needs to be conducted by other professionals. And I think that's the school business manager for a start. And there is a notion in this country that we have, or there's a promotion of distributed leadership, where a group, I suppose, like a board of directors or even a jury in a court, many heads are better than one, and people have different levels of expertise and experience that they can bring together to make the best decisions on site. So,
well, boards can add extra pressure, though, to a business operation.
They can. But in a school, you've got many people who are leaders of various aspects of it. But at the moment, despite the notion of distributed leadership being really pervasive across the states and policies, etc., if you look at job and person specifications, if you look at the reality, a lot of the responsibility gets funneled to the principal, and so there's a notion that if it was really a shared responsibility, people making decisions in a shared way, taking responsibility for the strategy of the school, and then all of the facets that go into delivering and implementing that, I think it would make things a lot easier. And letting principals concentrate, and school leaders, other school leaders too, concentrate on teaching and learning, taking the administrative and the administrivia, if you like, the compliance, the regulatory, human resources, facilities management, budgets, all those sorts of things, have other people do that work for them.
Just before we bury down into this idea of perhaps schools needing business managers and devolving some of those tasks that currently principals are taking on, why, Karen, do you think we're seeing an increase in aggression against principals and teachers? Is it the sort of increasing pressure on students and so on their parents for their students to succeed as part of it?
I think the Australian population is very savvy. Often I don't think politicians give the general populace that credit, but they're concerned about their students' education, or every parent is. But I also think when you think about it, a school principal probably comes across many more members of the school public, of the school community in the general public, than people would in many other careers. So you've not only got your student population and your teachers, you've got the students' parents, you've got suppliers, you've got employers, there are all sorts of stakeholders. So in many ways, it's perhaps unsurprising. It's also unsurprising perhaps that secondary principals are influenced more or have these effects more than primary, because secondary schools are generally larger. It's a sad part of the job, a disappointing part of it. Thankfully, in my experience, it's not the major part of the job. It's an incidents occur that are unpleasant, that you don't like, but you want to get your focus. In the main, I think principals are very optimistic and resilient kind of people. They're very committed, they're very can do. If people have a problem, they want to help them solve it, and you don't want conflict in a school. But sometimes, and it seems to be mostly from parents, they can bully a principal if they don't like the decisions that have been made.
Sheree Vertigan, principals may have more autonomy in some areas. Now, that's been a whole shift shift, and certainly in Victoria it's been a big shift. But there's a whole new layer of accountability with every policy that gets rolled out, the national curriculum, national testing, the MySchool website. There's this whole extra layer of intense public scrutiny, which must surely be adding to the workload and stress for principals. Is that the case?
There's no doubt that that does add to the stress load and definitely adds to the workload. I mean, the current agenda is around public accountability, and whether you agree with that or not, that's the way it is. I guess probably in relation to what Karen was saying around distributive leadership, we all agree with that, we all support it, but ultimately the buck stops at the principal's door. You cannot say that someone else can hold the responsibility. If something goes wrong as the person in charge of the school, then you're the one who has to deal with it. And so with each new policy, each new initiative, each new expectation, ultimately it's about the principal's responsibility, firstly, to find someone on their staff who's able to do it, to resource it if they can, and then to make sure that they achieve what they set out to achieve.
But should that change, in a sense, should as Karen suggests, perhaps there should be a business manager in schools to help principals lose some of that responsibility, shed some of that responsibility and devolve it to a business manager?
I think if you asked any principal, they would say they would love a business manager. I guess the question is, where does the money come from to pay for that business manager? Like everything that we do in schools, it's about finding the resources and recognising what your priority is. And for many principals, they'll say that first and foremost, their priority is the students. And so the additional money they have would be directed to that. But through Empowering Local Schools initiative, if they said, well, we'll all have a business manager, I think that principals would be cheering and saying, well, that has to be an advantage to me in this situation.
Dr. Philip Riley from Senior Lecturer in Education at Monash University. This is a very sobering figure, isn't it, that 70% of principals will be reaching retirement age within the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's a very difficult figure to actually pin down because nobody wants to
commit to retirement. No.
Well, the financial crisis has probably changed that a little bit for a lot of people. And government bodies particularly are not terribly happy about releasing that sort of information because that looks like they're not planning very well.
Are we facing a major shortage of school principals?
I think we are. I mean, one of the things and picking up the point about distributed leadership, I think that's been a really double-edged sword because a lot of younger teachers, leading teachers, assistant principals have been brought into that sort of higher level leadership. They see how difficult it is and say, no, thank you very much, I'll just stay where I am. So there's a huge drop off now in application rates for principalship. So there's this double-edged problem of a lot of people potentially about to move out and nobody wanting to take over.
With what consequences?
That's to be seen, isn't it?
It's a $6 billion question, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's a lot of schools that you would think are, you know, a plum job that get maybe two or three applicants when the position of principal comes up.
Your survey, though, did detect a great, immense degree of satisfaction amongst principals. How did they express that satisfaction? Where is the satisfaction in being a school principal?
One of the things that's coming out of the survey is they do appreciate the levels of autonomy that they do have. One of the most autonomous people in a school is the principal. And while all of the people in the role might be complaining when they get together, and, you know, I've seen this happen, if you asked any of them, do you want to go back to being a teacher, they all say no. So the autonomy is a really useful thing. They do get to put their stamp on the school. I mean, it's interesting in light of that the second biggest stressor they identified was not enough time to concentrate on teaching and learning. They want to get in and be the leading learner and the leading educator.
Well, they can't do everything.
Exactly.
But also one of the stressors that they mentioned was the fact that they still don't have autonomy to decide whether to hire or fire teachers that aren't performing.
Yes, that's right. That would be one of the big problems.
One of the more difficult issues.
Yep.
Look, a question for each of you. We urgently then need to attract more people to take up the job of school principal. What do you think would make the most impact? Karen?
Well, I think there's several things. When you talk to principals, they want more time, as Phil said. They want more money, more resources. Budgets are always tight, which is Cherie's point as to why some schools don't have other people in the system to help them do some of the work, so sharing the workload. They want a reduced administrative role and more focus on teaching and learning and students. They also want a greater role in determining the education policy in education and the futures of education. They want to see more equity amongst the systems and schools and states. They'd like to see less media bashing, and I'm not talking about Life Matters or the ABC, but the papers are often full of teacher bashing, and so they'd like to see amongst the populace a greater respect for education and for the teaching profession in general. Those sorts of things. But it's the good side of the job, the students. I mean, that's the joy of it, is the core business of the school. It's the teaching, the learning, the curriculum, the students. That's the joy. It's the other stuff. So principals love their job. That's what they're talking about. There's a whole lot of it that they don't like, and it's all of the compliance and those sorts of things, which is an enormous workload and very boring. So market testing, the tuck shop or cleaning contract, for example, is very unappealing.
Well, Cherie, just briefly, a final comment to you, very briefly. We've only got 30 seconds.
Well, I think I could sum it up by saying that one of the things that principals commonly say is when it all becomes a little bit tough, they go and spend time with the children in the yard and children in the classroom.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's the reason I became a principal, it's the reason why most of us did. Mm. It's about being able to make a difference and see that you're making that difference. That brings you huge pleasure, and it's a great privilege to share that crucial time with so many young people.
Isn't that a great point? Philip, final comment to you.
Oh, that's a great point to finish on, isn't it? Really?
It is, isn't it? Perhaps we can. Look, your survey, the interim report, will be published on the Principals Australia website, and this week, Professor Karen Starr...
Yeah,
sure.
It's already available on the principalhealth.org website.
It is indeed, and look, we'll link to that website from the Life Matters website, and Karen Starr, you're launching your new book this week, Above... and Beyond the Bottom Line, The Extraordinary Evolution of the Education Business Manager.
That's right.
Look, thanks to you all for joining us on the program.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cherie Vertigan, President of the Australian Secondary Principals Association, Professor Karen Starr from Deakin University, and Dr. Philip Riley, Senior Lecturer in the School of Education at Monash University. And we'll pop more details on our website. And we'd love to hear from you if you're a school principal. Get in touch. Pop an email through our website, abc.net.au/radionational/lifematters. You can use your whole name or even just your first name if you'd like to tell us a story about your experience of being a principal. Look, coming up next, a young woman who grew up in a community that turned very, very bad indeed.